You're listening to the Inside the Mix podcast with your host, Mark Matthews.
Hello and welcome to the Inside the Mix podcast. I'm Mark Matthews, your host, musician, producer, and mix and mastering engineer. You've come to the right place if you want to know more about your favorite synth music artists, music engineering and production, songwriting, and the music industry. I've been writing, producing, mixing, and mastering music for over 15 years, and I want to share what I've learned with you. Hello, folks, and welcome back to the Inside the Mix podcast. This episode is going out the day after New Year's Day 2024, so a big happy new year to you, the listener. I hope you had an amazing new year and Christmas as well, and you are ready to kickstart your musical journey in 2024, because I know I am. So just before Christmas, you'll probably know if you are a regular listener that I released an EP, Lost and Found, and it's done really well. Considering I released it during December, which is when most people listen to Christmas music, the response has been really, really good. So big thank you to everybody who's listened, shared, liked, commented, etc. Lost and Found. Also, just before Christmas, I put out a communication asking for your successes of 2023. And I've got a couple that I'm going to share with you today. And the first one is from an individual who was on the podcast in the first series. I cannot remember the podcast number, but it's an artist called 90s Maze and a gentleman called Fed. So let's have a listen to the success. And there's also a question involved as well that I'm going to answer afterwards. So here we go.
Hi, guys. 90s Maze is here. Thank you so much for the opportunity. And my biggest music win of 2023 is the release of my second EP, Story Number 2, Confession, that you can find on every digital platform. And also, I had the pleasure to collaborate with Mythic Rhythmic blog for an article of my career. So, Mark, here's my question. Have you found some difficult to produce song for other artists? Have you left your comfort zone, or do you prefer stick on your style? I wish happy holiday to everyone and see you in 2024 with new music.
So this is a really good question, and I think it comes down to this, really. I think if someone's paying me to produce, mix, or master their music, and it's outside of my wheelhouse, so they've approached me and they ask if I would be able to work with them on their project, I would be honest and just say, look, this isn't for me. I would be doing you a disservice if I attempted to work on you with this, knowing that there's going to be a monetary transaction involved. And what I generally do is then refer them on to someone that I trust and know who would do their music service in that particular genre. And I think if it's my own music, then I'm very much open to working in different genres. For example, 3 years ago, I released an R&B track. I've done house, I've done metal, I've done rock. And I kind of know, having done all that, it's now led me down this path where I know where my sort of sound is going. And it's kind of this retro wave synth indie pop with a bit of 80s rock in there as well. So having done all these different genres in my own music, it's helped me now hone in and decide on where I want to take my own music. But to summarize, if someone was approaching me with a project and I felt that it was outside of my wheelhouse, I would refer them on to someone I know and trust who would do justice to their project. If it were my own music, then yeah, by all means, I would try all these different sounds and sonic soundscapes to see what I could come up with. So the next success is from an artist called Valley Lights. And this is Kai of Valley Lights, describing his success of 2023. And there's also another question that I'm going to answer thereafter.
Hey, this is Kai from Valley Lights. My biggest music win of 2023 was releasing my debut album, Two Lane Highway, through Outland Recordings. My music question for Mark is, how do you maintain a strong social media presence after the release of a large project like an album? Happy 2024, everybody.
So this is a really, really good question, and it's something that I certainly haven't got cracked myself. Haven't released the EP, Lost and Found. I've been on the promo train and whatnot. And to be honest with you, as Christmas approached, I fell off the wagon. The wheels fell off a bit in terms of my promotion. I stopped being so promo marketing heavy on social media. But I think the key thing really is you need to be posting a lot. And as much as that beguiles me to say that, but I think it's also important to, if you are posting, to make sure it's of good quality as well, which is probably one of the reasons why I stopped posting so much, because I wanted the post to be of a certain quality and I didn't want to rush them. So I thought I'd rather just not put anything out rather than just put something out for the sake of it. And I think having sort of studied what people are doing and what is successful, it's doing something that sort of engages the listener, the viewer as well, and gets them to stop and interact with what you're doing. It sort of evokes an emotion or there's a question involved rather than just saying, here's my song, listen to it. You're asking like polls, questions, getting them involved in what you're doing. And there's an artist who's really, really good at doing this, and it's Synth Principle. And I speak to Synth Principle Dan a lot on social media, and he's got it down. So I strongly recommend the audience listening to go and check out Dan Synth Principle on social media, because he's very, very good at what he's doing. And if you follow his sort of ethos and what he's doing, you'll see some success. And if you follow him on Threads as well, there's some really, really good tips that he's putting out there to help grow your social media presence. And it's probably something I need to do in 2024. I think from what I've read, responding to comments that people post on your posts is pivotal as well, and engaging, and also posting on other people's releases as well and sharing them. And it's something I'm going to do more of in 2024. I do it, but I do need to do more of it. So I don't really have any tips per se on how to stay relevant, but I think it's social media, isn't it? You just need to be social. But throughout 2024, if I come up with any other ideas, etc., I will be sure to put them in the podcast. If I hit something that wins, then I will post it and do an episode on it maybe, and share it with you all. So again, I don't really have the answer to that question, unfortunately. But what I would say is just look at artists that are doing it right. Look at the successful engagement they're having and think, actually, how could I do that with my own content? And then put your own spin on it. So there we go. Two great questions and two great successes from a couple artists in 2023. So a big thank you to Valley Lights and 90s Maze for sharing their successes and questions on the podcast. So let's actually now dive into this episode, episode 123. And this centers around making synth music on a budget. And I had the pleasure of chatting with Regan Ram of Orpheus Academy. And we discussed topics such as starting simple, so essential equipment he would recommend for someone wanting to start mixing and producing synthwave. Then we talk about maximizing minimal gear, once again working on a budget. And then we have the classic discussion surrounding education versus equipment and portfolio. Should you invest time in education, or should you go out there and invest time in gathering experience? And also that sort of education, as I say, versus equipment debate. And then we talk about software selection at the end. So there's a lot in here for you if you're interested in getting started with synth music and how you can do it on a budget, and also just working with what you have and getting the most out of the tools, techniques, and equipment that you already have. So let's dive into this episode. Hello, folks. And in this episode, I'm very excited to welcome our guest today, Regan Ram. Now, Regan has been writing, recording, and mixing music since 2011 and received a degree in audio engineering in 2019 from Unity Game Recording Institute, a fellow academic. It's his mission to help fellow musicians and producers improve their art and make a living doing the work that they love. Hello, Regan. Thanks for joining me today. And how are you?
I am fantastic. So happy to be here, Mark. All of your episodes. I've learned so much listening to them. So it's really exciting being on here with you. And probably should clarify this. My name is actually pronounced Regan, but that's totally fine. A lot of people pronounce it wrong. It's a little confusing, but yeah.
Yeah, you know what? Now looking at it, Regan, and The Exorcist is like one of my favorite movies, and that is exactly how it's spelled. And in The Exorcist, it's pronounced Regan.
I haven't seen that. I need to see that. No.
Have you not?
Oh, yeah, it was named after the great American president, Ronald Reagan.
Oh, right. Yeah, I was going to say, it'd be surprising if, I mean, it might be that people name their child after Reagan from The Exorcist. Yeah, I imagine it probably would be more apt to be Ronald Reagan rather than, that. Did I pronounce your surname correctly as well? I didn't check off air if that's correct.
Yeah, it's Ram, but I mean, with your wonderful English accent there, it's fine, so.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's one of those I always check off air and I forgot to, but I got half of it right. So at least we got somewhere there. So for the audience listening, I did actually appear on Reagan's podcast a few months ago. I don't know if you want to give a quick shout out to that before we dive into some questions.
Yeah, that was a really great show. Yeah, I should have looked up the link off the top. I don't remember off the top of my head what that was, but you can find it on my YouTube channel, or if you, you know, look up any podcasting platform, you can find it. And we had a great discussion, and we talked a lot about, you know, production and songwriting, and got even into some synthwave specific tips. So that was a lot of fun.
Mm. Just for the audience listening, what's the name of it?
The name of the podcast. Episode?
The podcast itself.
The podcast itself is just called the Musicians Odyssey Podcast. So you can look that up.
Cool.
Or just search for Orpheus Audio Academy on YouTube.
Marvelous. I'll put a link to that episode in the show notes. And the audience, obviously, listen to this one first, but then you can go and have a listen to that episode. So today we are looking at synthwave music production. That's what we're diving into today. Now, obviously, that could then extend to synth music and other forms of synth in general as well. But I thought it'd be quite cool to start with sort of this particular question, line of questioning is starting simple. So, Reagan, for those new to the genre, who might not have a lot of gear, can you tell our audience what's the essential equipment you'd recommend for someone wanting to mix or produce, let's say, music, synthwave music on a budget?
Yeah, great question, and definitely relevant. And also, I could include myself here because I don't have a lot of fancy equipment as of right now either. So I'm definitely getting by with the bare essentials here. What I recommend is, you know, might seem obvious, but you need to have a decent computer. So as far as like specific like specs for that, having like at least like 16 gigabytes of RAM, the more RAM the better, because that's what is the muscle of the computer. I'm not a computer person, but this is kind of what I've learned. And then also a good website is cpubenchmark.net. You can go to, and you can put in your CPU and like test it. And you want to have a score that's above 7,000 if you can for music production. And so then just for reference, my computer, what I'm using right now is a MacBook Pro with the M1 Pro Apple chip. And so, and I have 16 gigabytes of RAM, and my CPU benchmark score came out to be 21,000. So quite a bit higher than that, but definitely not like a supercomputer, definitely something that's affordable. And I think in most people's price ranges, I waited for Black Friday to get a nice deal on it. You can always find, you know, used equipment, used computers on different marketplaces. So you don't need like one of those supercomputers. And then, as far as a DAW goes, this is interesting. Actually, my most popular video on my YouTube channel is a clip I did from an interview with my mentor where we talked about, hey, what's the most popular DAW? And I think that's, you know, everyone's so passionate about all their specific DAW that I think that's why it's become so popular, because I get comments multiple comments a day on that video. People saying, no, this DAW, or no, my DAW, or this one. And like, that's kind of the point of that video if you go and watch it. It's like, whatever, they're all kind of similar. There no one is like better quality than another DAW. Just whatever you're familiar with, it really just comes down to workflow preference. For example, I started with Cubase. I really loved it, and I was really familiar with that. But then as I got Mac and I started learning Logic, I just found I liked the workflow preference better. I thought its built-in sounds a little bit better, which was good for me as just a producer and a songwriter. But it all, whatever DAW you choose, if you have a DAW and you really like it, just go with that one. If you don't have a DAW, I really recommend Logic if you are on Mac, because it does is really geared towards the songwriter, the music producer, versus like the solo music producer. And right, some people, like my mentor who uses Digital Performance, he's used to recording bands. If you're recording bands, maybe you want something different, because there's Logic does take some like shortcuts, which I think is good, because it's assuming that maybe you're not used to the actual studio environment. So if you're more used to the computer world, I really like Logic. But if you're on like a PC or something, you know, Cubase is great. I heard a lot of good things about Ableton. A lot of people in my audience really like Studio One. So DAW isn't really important, I would say, for synthwave or any genre. It's just whatever you're comfortable with. And then from there, if we're talking about just, you know, budget, you know, bare essentials, get the best pair of open-backed linear headphones that you can get. So for me, I got these headphones right here, which are the Sennheiser HD600s. They're really great. They're kind of been a standard for a long time because they are very linear. That means the frequency response is very flat across the spectrum. You don't have any too many dips or peaks. There's a little bit of a roll off on the low end. I'll talk about why that's important in a second. I don't know if you have any comments on that, Mark, as well. But why you want to have linear headphones is because you want to hear, you know, as accurately as possible, right? If you're using consumer headphones, a lot of times they have big, you know, peaks and cuts because they want it to, you know, sound the best. Like, you know, if it's like Beats by Dre, you know, they'll have like huge boost in the bass end because they think that's people want to listen to that huge bass and stuff. But then if you were listening to those while mixing, then you're going to be inadvertently removing bass from your mix because you're hearing so much bass in your headphones. So you want to get something that's as flat as possible, as you can look up the frequency curve of the whatever headphones you're looking into. And that way you can get the most accurate picture when you're mixing. And that's also going to be, you know, cheaper than getting an actual pair of monitors. Also, there's some disadvantages to using monitors if you don't have an acoustically treated room. So get the best pair of open-backed headphones you can. And open-backed because that allows a little bit of bleed between the left and the right, so they're not going to be quite as isolated, because when people are listening to your music, they're not – I mean, people listen to headphones, but a lot of times there are people listening on speakers in different rooms. There's going to be some crossover between left and right. You're not going to be completely isolated if you have closed-backed headphones. So a little bit of bleed allows you to make a little bit more accurate mixing decisions as well. And the final tool, this is a big one that I don't see anyone really talking about very often, is you want to get some kind of software that tunes your room, and that would include your headphones as well. So even if you are just using headphones, this is still good to have, because even these are really good headphones, but they still have a little bit of a dip in the low end. So that means I'm not hearing quite as much bass as there actually is. And I found before I got this tool, a lot of my mixes were too muddy and too bassy. And so this tool you want to get is, there's a couple different ones out there. The one I use is Sound ID Reference by SonarWorks. And so what this does is you get a little microphone that comes with it, or it just knows if you have monitors. Otherwise, it like has the frequency profiles of many different of the most popular mixing headphones out there. So it has these Sennheiser headphones in there already. It knows what the frequency curve is, and then applies a correction over your whole mix. So it's a plugin. I put it on my stereo out, and it kind of corrects in real time what I'm hearing. So then when I make mixing decisions, I can make accurate decisions, and then I just turn that off when I bounce the track or export the track. So you want to get some kind of tuning software, especially if you have like cheaper headphones, you can get this tool and it can make those headphones more accurate. If you have monitors, it can also help correct your monitors based on how your room is. So that's a really important tool to get, and a lot of people don't talk about it.
We'll be right back.
So I've got a hunch about a common struggle we all face: mastering. If you're an independent artist or music producer, you've probably encountered the frustration of masters that just don't hit the mark, right? They lack balance and refuse to play nicely across different devices and environments. Ever found yourself wondering, why don't my masters sound like my references? Perhaps you've spent countless hours attempting to master your tracks only to be unsatisfied with the results. Maybe you've tried every silver bullet plugin or even dabbled in AI. Or perhaps you're already working with an engineer but you're eager to explore different possibilities. Well, here's the solution you've been searching for: Synth Music Mastering. I'm offering a game-changing opportunity with a one-time free test master for a limited time. Picture elevating your music with my unwavering commitment to quality and a personalized touch that you just don't get with the big mastering studios. The best part, it won't cost you a penny. Just submit your finished mix and let's see how we can transform your music together. Don't let mastering be a mystery any longer. Say goodbye to the frustration and step into a world of sonic excellence. Grab your free test master now. Click the link in the episode description or head over to synthmusicmastering.com. Yeah, some fantastic advice in there. There's a lot to unpack in there as well. As soon as you mentioned there about tuning your headphones in your monitor systems, immediately SonarWorks sprung to mind, because I remember using that a while back. And I know Waves, it doesn't necessarily tune your headphones, but it can put you in artificial environments. You've got the Waves, right? NX range. I think a while ago I was using the Waves NX Abbey Road setup emulation when I was auditioning mixes. And then you've got things like VSX, but obviously if we're on a budget, I think the Slate Digital VSX headphones, albeit as good as they are, might not.
Yeah, another good one is the Arc system by IK Multimedia. I think that's in a similar price range to SonarWorks. By the way, I think I forgot to mention, I actually have a complete gear guide that has links to everything I just mentioned. Plus, if you're wanting to maybe upgrade something, I've got some other recommendations in there. So if you want to get that gear guide, you can go to orpheusaudioacademy.com/gear guide, all one word. And that has completely free, and it has a whole bunch of my gear recommendations in it.
Lovely stuff. Our audience listening, I'll put a link to that in the episode show notes. Another one that I think is worth mentioning. Now, this is free, and this moves really into tuning your room. So if you have got loudspeakers, there's a program, and I've used it a while back, and it's free, and it's called REW, and you can actually use it. You can download it, and all you need is a measurement mic. And you can buy a measurement mic for, I think, if you get sort of like a Beyerdynamic Dynamic one, or even a Behringer one, actually. It might be Behringer. And you can pick those up for about 30, 40 quid. And then you can use this free software, and it'll give you the frequency response of your room. And then you can start to tune your room. So audience listening, that's another really good one to look out for as well. So obviously, you're tuning your headphones. You've got SonarWorks and the IK Multimedia one. But the free REW, what that stands for, I don't know. But you can actually tune your room, or actually you can look at the frequency response of your room. That's really, really cool. Open back headphones as well is another great one. Something that I don't use. I've been meaning to get myself a really good pair of open back headphones, but I keep getting, maybe it's Black Friday at the time of recording this episode. So Black Friday has just gone, and I picked up, and I've got this in my notes here. So this is another good tip, because you mentioned there about buying a computer on Black Friday, etc. To look out for plugins. Mm-hmm. If you're new to music production, wait for Black Friday deals. I picked up the Devil Lock Sound, is it Sound Toys? Sound Toys Devil Lock plugin. And the day before it was 80, and I picked it up for 20 just in the Black Friday deal. So that's another really good one. I love what you said there about DAWs as well. And that video you have where people are saying they're sort of campaigning for their favorite DAW. Because I noticed when I put tips online for a particular feature of Logic, because I'm a Logic user as well, more often than not, I'll get at least one person say, I can do that in Fruity Loops like this with one key command. And like, they really love to champion their DAW. And they'll be like, yeah, I can do that. I can do that in Ableton really easy. I'm like, yeah, that's great. But not everybody's using that.
I have a suspicion too. Maybe this is off base, but I wonder if deep down a lot of people are insecure about their DAW, because they do see other people saying, look how amazing this DAW is. Or just the fact that there's so many DAWs out there, there's kind of FOMO, right? The fear of missing out. And so you wonder, is my DAW really good enough? And so then that makes people, you know, when they hear someone else recommending a DAW, they feel like they need to defend their DAW and stuff. And there's no need for that, right? Every DAW is great. It's just whatever you prefer.
Yeah. Yeah. I was recording some content the other day, and one of them was centered around, I don't think I've put it out yet, which was about selecting a DAW. And I remember years ago, I had this conversation with someone. They were trying to convince me that a DAW has a sound.
Oh my gosh, yes, I know.
Yeah. And there may be some real, like, really good ears out there who can pick that up. But most people, when they're consuming your music, I don't think they're thinking, that sounds like Cubase to me. They're enjoying the music. No one really cares, you know.
Yeah, I've had some people leave comments trying to convince me that I can't remember what DAW. It was some DAW like I hadn't even heard of, and they were like, it treats the waveforms in this DAW, like the wave files are better than in Logic or whatever. And like, a wave file is a wave file though, so
yeah. Ones and zeros. Yeah. I don't buy into that. Like, I've
never heard anyone this video any pro mention a DAW has better audio quality than another DAW. I've never heard that. I've never experienced that.
It's what you put into it, ultimately. Like, for one of the better, you put shit into it, you're probably going to get that out of it. You know, you got to put something
right.
Good
they're
into
all
it.
Blank canvases. If your painting doesn't turn out right, it's not the canvas's fault. The canvas isn't going to make your painting better. That's what DAWs are. They're a canvas.
Yeah. Bad workman blames his tools, as we say over here. I don't know if that's a phrase in the US, but it's certainly what we say over here. You know. And then CPU benchmark. I've been meaning to do that with, because I've got a Mac Studio now. I branched out and got one of those and upgraded for my old MacBook Pro. I'd love to know what that is. I think in between this. Yeah. Oh, I'm so glad I've got it. I used to record the podcast. This is going off a total tangent now. I used to record the podcast episode using this MacBook Pro, and it would sit there, and then you would just hear this as it was just rinsing the CPU. But now I've got this. Mac Studio, and it's much better. There is one question I was going to ask you, actually. This is a bit of a tangent from the questions that I've got lined up here, but you mentioned a mentor, which I thought is really cool. And I've asked this a few times on the podcast. I remember having this conversation with Dan Furr earlier in the year. And regarding a mentor, how important do you think it is to have a mentor in the or a coach or something along those lines in those early stages?
I think it's vital. It's so important. Yeah, I think we're going to talk about that a little later. Something I like to say is like education is gold, but school is a scam most of the time. It's a little controversial because now I went to school, I got a degree, but what was so powerful about the school that I went to is it was more like an apprenticeship. I think that's a lost art that doesn't really exist so much anymore because of the higher education, big business kind of model that's taken over. That's the way it used to be. Like if you wanted to be a blacksmith, right, you go train under a blacksmith, an expert, and become a blacksmith, right? Benjamin Franklin, he was famous for, you know, he was an apprentice first. So that's a lot more common back in the day. And today everything's been kind of turned over to this education system. But I think that's the best way to learn is actually more so having a mentor than these school models. And so the way the college I went to was it was a college, it was accredited, I got a degree, but it was running out of a actual commercial recording studio. So, and the instructor was actually owner of the studio. He built the studio. He actually recorded real bands. So I got to experience recording real bands and mixing them and actually learn on a real console and using real equipment in a real world environment, not a classroom. And so that was really invaluable. And so, right, that's, you know, might not something that you can replicate, right? It might be hard to find something similar to that, but I definitely think mentorship is really invaluable and can definitely speed up your learning curve and get you to where you want to go a whole lot faster and really solve a lot of frustration for me. Cause before then I was like trying to do stuff on my own, watching tutorials and just wasn't quite getting there. And so actually being able to go in person to talk to an expert and ask them questions, like we only met once a week. And the class was only like me plus like four or five other guys. And they're supposed to be like 3-hour classes, but a lot of times like we would be an hour late because like I would just spend like the first hour just asking the instructor questions like, what about this or what about this? And then like the other classmates would kind of get annoyed. But I learned a lot from being able to do that and ask a lot of questions.
Yeah, I would agree. And it mirrors something that I experienced. And it's slightly different, I guess. In that I remember when I was in a band years ago, and the audience listening will know this because I've mentioned it numerous times, when I was in this metal band and I was a self-taught guitarist. And you, like that, I was using Total Guitar at the time and I was downloading tabs from Ultimate Guitar and trying to sort of make my way through all this information, trying to make myself a better guitarist. And I went into a studio and it really highlighted the flaws in my technical ability in that I wasn't able to cleanly record a riff or something like that. And it's not until then I went and had a lesson and actually reached out and got someone to show me and I could ask questions that I really then managed to actually go up another level and quicker. So it totally mirrors what you said there about if you do have that mentorship and that coaching that you can make those strides quicker. And also you're learning from somebody else's mistakes that they've probably made or somebody has told them about the mistakes they've made and then you can get rid of those. And that's huge, right. I think that's incredibly important. So what I mean, you mentioned I was going to ask you about this later, so it's kind of like nicely segues into that. Not that I planned that. Education versus equipment, in my notes I put high-end equipment. Mm-hmm. So which do you think has played more of a role in your sort of professional quality, your music? Would you say education, coaching, mentorship is more important than having this high-end
absolutely
equipment,
or absolutely just
access to loads and abundance of equipment?
Yeah, for sure. Education far, far outweighs equipment. And going back to being, you know, working in the studio, that's where you could really see it because like a lot of times we would have these assignments where myself and, you know, a few other students in my class, we'd have to take a song that we recorded from an actual artist and we have to mix it. And, you know, we'd go in, we'd mix it together. We'd take turns on the console, like EQing and, you know, adding some, you know, compressing from like the DAW or whatever. And we do like the best we could. And then the instructor, his name was Anthony, he'd come in and be like, you know, you're really happy with that. You think that's good? And we were like, yes. And then he's like, well, don't you hear, you know, this, you know, a little bit of that resonance over, you know, this or that. And then like stuff we couldn't really even hear. And then he'd go in and he'd mix it and it'd be like night and day using the same equipment, right? In a professional studio, using a mixing console. So even if you have the best equipment, if you don't know how to use it, or you just haven't developed your critical listening, you haven't developed those skills, it's not going to be as good a quality. It's not going to be, you know, that professional quality. And then converse, you know, on the flip side of that, the budget gear today is so good, right? The budget gear we have today is like better than some of the, you know, thousands, you know, tens of thousands of dollars worth of equipment they had, you know, back when the Beatles were recording, right? You listen to, you know, Beatles recordings and productions, and you know, it pales in comparison quality wise, like just production quality wise to today. And some people would say there's, you know, there's a charm to that, right? And of course, songwriting trumps production every time. But you can just see that what we have today, what you have in your computer, is better than what they had in like entire recording studios, you know, several decades ago. So same thing with like microphones are really good. It's funny too, because like back in the analog days, like they were always fighting noise, like get noise removed. How do we remove noise? Because every microphone, every piece of equipment introduced some kind of noise to the recording. But now you have all these plugins coming out trying to add noise back in, because that had a character, a charm to it that you kind of, things can kind of feel a little dull or stale without it. So it's kind of funny how, you know, things have come full circle a little bit there. But I guess just to sum that up, yeah, definitely education is far more important than the gear you have. So I think I have a blog post on my blog where I talk about like how to become a music producer, and I walk through several steps. And then the very last step is investing in like pro quality gear. So that's definitely can make a difference. So, but you can get like 80% of the way to pro quality just with budget gear and education, maybe even 90%. And then that pro gear is what's going to get you maybe from like 90 to 100%. But the thing is, like for just the casual listener out there, they're not going to really notice 80, you know, or 90% to 100%. They're not going to really notice the extra 10%. Maybe some will, but you can still get really good quality music without that professional quality equipment.
We'll be right back.
If you love good music and good podcasts, you'll love Roots Music Rambler. I'm Jason Falls. My co-host Francesca Folinazzo and I talk to the singers, songwriters, musicians, and more in Americana, alt-country, bluegrass, folk, blues, and beyond. We share our own takes on the latest news in the space and recommend new music for you to explore every episode. Come get to the roots of the music you love. Find us at RootsMusicRambler.com or go wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe to Roots Music Rambler.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think I've mentioned this on the podcast before, and I think I've put it in posts for those in the audience that follow on social media, which echoes this in that I think it's important to learn how to use the tools that you have to hand. If you're not able to get a specific outcome using the tools that you have, don't necessarily think, okay, I need to go and buy XYZ plugin to solve this problem. Maybe you need to look a bit deeper and think, actually, do I really understand how a compressor works? Do I really understand what this compressor is doing? Or do I really understand frequency and tonal balance? Have I got that quite right using the EQs that I have? Because you could do all that in Logic. The compressors in Logic are fantastic, as is the EQ in Logic as well. And I'm sure it is in other DAWs too. So it's not, and I think I've mentioned this before, like if you sign up to, I'm not going to name any particular sort of plugin manufacturers or third-party plugins, but everybody seems to have the air quote silver bullet that's going to solve a specific problem. But if you don't know how that problem is created in the first instance, you probably need to go back and sort of and learn the tools of the trade, as it were. You mentioned there about critical listening. Have you got any sort of tips for our audience and how to improve or rather any critical listening tips, let's say? That's probably a better way of putting it.
I mean, it just comes down to listening intentionally and spending a lot of time doing that. So listening to and using references is a big one as well as part of that. So when you are creating a mix, comparing it to like a pro mix that you like, and then listening to how do certain specific instruments show up in the mix, how do certain frequencies show up, right? How does your low end compare to the low end of the reference track? And just kind of being that as a starting point. My instructor actually created a program. I don't know. I don't think it's for, I don't know if he has it for sale, but I know there's other programs out there that can help you train your ears. So what that would do is it will like play a frequency, and then you're supposed to guess what frequency is just on that sound, that tone you heard, or how many dBs it is based on how loud, or it'll play the tone at one volume level, then at a lower volume level, and you have to guess how what the dB difference is. And so that was really humbling when I first started going through that. I was like way off. And so there's tools like that, but you don't have to get something like that. Again, it's just if you have references that can really help, because you're that's what you're aiming for. If you have that reference track and you can just know what to listen for those different frequencies, listen to the different instruments and get, you know, a match to that, that can really help you learn over time, help you develop your critical listening.
Yes, reference tracks. I've banged on about that before on the podcast as well. And I use references in songwriting. I use a reference in mixing, and I use a reference in mastering. I'm using references all the time. Specifically as well, this is really important for the audience. If your room isn't treated or you're using headphones, specifically in that low end, because you can see if you've got your reference, you can compare the low end response, as you mentioned then, the frequency response to a reference track. One tool I like to use, it's not free, unfortunately, is Tonal Balance, the Isotope Tonal Balance, which I think is fantastic. Albeit, it's one of those ones whereby they've just got a load of data and they've put it together and they've come up with this frequency curve that they think represents pop, rock, reggae, rap, hip-hop, whatever.
You can also add your own reference tracks if you're trying to mimic the frequency of the reference into Tonal Balance,
And I think as well, Logic has EQ Match now. I didn't dive into this the other day, but it does. Have you recently, this is tangent once again, have you recently updated Logic? It's now got a mastering
I did update Logic, but I have not used the new mastering tool yet. I've been curious to try it out, because it looks kind of like Ozone Light maybe. I have Ozone, so I've thought about doing like a video comparing the two and seeing how they shake out.
It's really useful. I tried it a couple of days ago because I'm mastering some tracks for my EP. And I think it's a really good tool to use for referencing, but in a different way, in that for the audience listening, if you want to hear what your song could sound like when it's mastered, it's a really cool tool to have at the end, because it will do what Logic does. It will analyze the, I'm not a salesman here, but it will analyze the track, and then it will come up with an EQ frequency curve. And you can then tailor it, whether you want it to be sort of like anywhere from 0% to 100%, what it thinks it should sound like. It's really, really good. It's a really nice addition. And also, one other thing as well, which I'm so glad they brought out in Logic, is in when you bounce a track now, and it says in there you can press command and full stop or period, whatever you want to call it, and it will stop the bounce halfway through or whenever you want, which I've wanted for so long. The amount of times with a podcast as well, you've got a 40-minute podcast and I've got to go all the way through to the end. There probably was a key command, but I didn't know what it was.
Yeah, that's happened before. So glad I left something on the master on the mix bus I didn't want on there. Or because sometimes I'll put a limiter on while I'm mixing just to kind of see what it would sound like with limiting, but then I turn it off to go to mastering. And I'm like, I left it on and I just have to wait for it to bounce the whole way. So that's really nice. I didn't know they introduced that.
Yeah, it's really good. It's really helpful. And I've done that before. I've bounced it and I look at the chain at the end. I'm like, I've left the gain plug-in on there. It's just going to bounce the whole thing in mono because I was checking. I love what you said there as well about with the critical listening and that plug-in whereby you're picking up frequencies. I used to do this with an RTA when I was doing a bit of live sound, a real-time analyzer. And when I had some time to myself, I would just sit there and whistle and try and whistle certain frequencies. I think I got 1K down and 500 hertz. And then I would just whistle into my phone, and then it would just peak at a particular frequency. And that's sort of how I learned.
Yeah, I definitely master at 1K right now, because I have 4 children. And apparently the cry of an infant is right around 1K, because that's like what we hear the best. So I should have that frequency down right now.
Yeah.
Or maybe I've lost some frequencies, conversely.
Yeah. You just tuned it out. Yeah. You tuned it out. All your songs now, all your productions are going to have this huge dip around 1K, because you just tuned that sound out. Fantastic. So a line of questioning, moving on slightly now. So given your sort of expertise and experience since 2011, maybe you could share some tips with our audience on how to get the most out of sort of a limited or budget equipment. So maybe we're thinking, actually, we're using the stock plugins in our DAW. How can we get the most out of those when recording or mixing synthwave?
Yeah, so a big thing is just knowing how to use the tools, right? Maybe Maybe it means diving into the manual. I've done that. So really understanding how to use the tools for one thing, and really just understanding mixing, right? Doesn't really matter the tool, right? Because all compressors are more or less the same. Same thing with EQs. So if you really get good at compression, EQ, that's like 80% of the battle. And so if you just really learn that, then the tools don't really matter as much. And then again, yeah, then you learn the tools themselves, right? Because every tool is a little bit different, right? In Logic, there's a lot of ways to add saturation that you might not know about, because a lot of saturation is kind of hidden within their different plugins. Like, for example, the compressors, you can actually add some saturation using the compressors if you turn up the, I can't remember what it's called now, the clipper or the distortion. I think it's called distortion in the Logic compressors. And they have different levels you can add, right? And same thing with like the vintage EQs. You can turn up the gain on there if you want to add some saturation. And that is a big part, specifically for synthwave. If you're mixing in the box, is you're going to be wanting to use a lot of saturation to get that richer, more vintage sound. So understanding your tools, understanding what your options are when you're using that budget equipment inside of your DAW, your stock plugins, so you know what tool to turn to in a specific situation.
Yeah, I think it goes back to what I said earlier about like knowing your tools, isn't it? And knowing the fundamentals, mm-hmm. Because EQ, the idea of an EQ is the same across an EQ, really. It's just you have things like fab filter where you've just got more bells and whistles. The fab filter crowd are probably going to come to me now with the Pro Q3 when I say that. But once again, going back to the EQ and Logic, I think it's fantastic what you can do with it now.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. It's only recently, actually, that I noticed it says it's got like HQ at the bottom, which I'm assuming maybe puts in linear phase.
I know there's a linear phase version of it I've used when mastering.
Yeah.
But I didn't know you could switch the default one. So it's interesting.
Yeah, have a look at the bottom. I think it says HQ. Well, it did anyway. It did last time I looked. But yeah, I think that's right. I think have you ever used Alchemy in any of your tracks?
I use Alchemy a ton. Yeah, there's the retro synth is good. Alchemy has a lot of good sounds in it. They have different banks. I really like the Prismatica bank, which is actually really small. There's only like maybe like 10 sounds in there, but I've used those a lot.
Yeah.
The classic synth. So Logic still has a lot of good sounds for synthwave.
It's got, I think, once again, this is I sound like a salesman here for Logic and Apple, but I'm sure there was with the update, there was also a sound bank that was for Alchemy as well, which I need to go and
listen to. Interesting, yeah, I'll have to try that out. They also have the Lindrum drum kit in there, so that's great for synthwave. Yeah, they've had that for, that came out with a 10.0 update. You got the Lindrum kit. They've also got like some 8-bit drum sounds in there. Yeah, they got a lot of good drum sounds. The drummer plugin's fantastic now. I think now you can take that the drummer data and you can use that with third-party tools now, I think, with the recent update.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned about Lindrum now, because I'm going to look into that. Because previously, I've always been creating my own software instruments and importing my own Lindrum samples.
Yeah, I do have my own free synthwave drum sample pack that has a bunch of Lindrum sounds. So if you do want some extra sounds, you can check that out. That's at orpheusaudioacademy.com/starter pack. It's got a bunch of other synthwave guides in it and some free Serum preset packs you can check out too.
Nice. This kind of like moves on nicely to my final question here, which is to do with sort of software selection. So we've mentioned about Logic, DAWs, and we've mentioned about third-party plugins. So maybe you think a bit wider now. So if our audience is just getting started, maybe they've got a bit of money, let's say, to invest in a third-party plugin. Can you tell our audience which sort of plugins you find are the best for creating that classic synthwave sound without breaking the bank?
For sure.
Without caveat,
if you're looking for software that like mimics vintage equipment, I really like Waves and IQ Multimedia. Those are plugins that I bought in the past that are really good. But I also am increasingly becoming a big fan of tools that are more made for the computer musician in mind. Because in a lot of ways, a lot of that vintage equipment is great, but it's made for with a physical environment in mind. So, but there's a lot of great tools coming out. A couple of my favorite companies are UJAM and Baby Audio. Baby Audio creates a lot of really great and interesting tools for mixing for the most part. They just created a synth as well that was really good, but I really like their like super VHS tool. So it has, it's kind of a multi effect. It has saturation built in. It has a chorus built in, bit crushing. You can add in some like VHS hiss, and all their tools are really, really easy to use. They have a really great transition tool they just came out with. So they have a really, I really love their tools. And you can actually get, I actually have discounts that you can use my code at checkout for both Baby Audio and UJAM to get discounts. So if you want to save some extra money, that's great as well. So for Baby Audio, the discount code is OAA and you get 10% off. And then for UJAM, it's OAA-20. You can get 20% off. And then UJAM is great because especially like their beatmaker tools, because they have like there's basically these drum synths. And so they have loops inside of them. They've got really great samples. If you want to just use the samples, really great customization. And so it's kind of like everything's already mixed for you for your specific genre. So for example, Synthwave, they have a Vice plugin that's really good. And they also have like a pop drummer called Candy. And those are probably, I use those like on almost every track I create. So those are really amazing tools that I really like to use.
Fantastic. Thank you for sharing those with the audience. Yes, the Baby Audio synth. I've been meaning to try that out or maybe take a demo of it, because I think it's their first synth, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah,
and
they've got
that way.
Yeah, they've got really a lot of great synthwave sounds in there, including there's it comes with a stock preset pack by Michael Oakley, who's a great synthwave artist. I know you've had him on your show.
I have so indeed, yes.
You can use a bunch of sounds by Michael Oakley if you want it right out of that synth.
Yes, I wish I knew what episode that was, but it was about this time last year. So I'm going to say it's in the 40s or 50s, audience listening. If you go back, you'll find it. I think there were two episodes actually in total with Michael Oakley. Yeah, great producer. And I know he's always releasing sample packs as well for Nexus. Did he do Serum? I'm not entirely sure. But no, fantastic. Lots of stuff to unpack there. Lots of great advice as well, Reagan. So thank you very much. I know our audience is going to take lots away. So you've mentioned a few different freebies that you've got going that I'll put in the episode show notes, but where can our audience, where's the best place to go to find more about you and what
Well, my home base is my website, so that's just orpheusaudioacademy.com. and then these days I'm mostly creating content on YouTube, so you can just search for Orpheus Audio Academy on YouTube, and that's where you can find me. I don't do too much on social media, so probably my website and my YouTube are the best places to find me.
Fantastic, audience. I will put that in the episode show notes. So lots of links actually to go away.
Yeah, sorry. Overwhelm me with all the.
No, it's all good stuff, man. Yeah, well, this is it. We've got lots going for free with the podcast as well. But I'll put a link to the episode of myself on Reagan's podcast as well. So you're going to have a listen to that, where the tables are turned and I'm on the other side, which is quite interesting because it doesn't happen often for me. So it was really enjoyable stuff. Huge thanks for joining me today. So I will catch up with you soon and enjoy what is left of your Sunday. Thank you very much, Reagan. Whoa! Before you go, make sure to snag your free test master from Synth Music Mastering. Imagine enhancing your music with my steadfast dedication to quality and that personalized touch. And here's the kicker, it's absolutely free, no cost at all. Simply head over to synthmusicmastering.com or click the link in the episode description to claim your free test master.